Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. How long does it take to walk from here to there? It's a fairly straightforward question that crops up often enough. Providing duration types of journeys on foot was the common sense answer that came to urban planning student and would-be pedestrian activist Matt Tomasulu from Raleigh, North Carolina, in the southern United States. His answer to this common question was to devise a set of signs that not only gave direction, but duration for journeys on foot, and set about putting them up around Raleigh. What if these guerrilla signs could be made available to anyone, anywhere? What if anyone could make some of their own? Using Kickstarter, the crowdfunding website to raise funds and spread the word, Matt created the web-based Walk Your City app. We in the UK may be more reticent about putting up signs around our towns, but it appears less so in North America, with not only citizens, but towns and city leaders making signs of their own to walk their city. The interview, recorded over the internet, opens with Matt explaining what is Walk Your City.
Walk Your City is basically, right now, it's one simple tool that is helping offline mobility, help increase offline mobility through communities really embracing walkability. It's a simple sign creation process using an online website. You basically go through 5 or 6 click step process and you determine where you'd like to place a sign that says how many minutes by foot it is to walk somewhere. You create the path, you define what the destination is, and you select a few other attributes like a direction of an arrow and a color for the sign that actually pertains to the type of destination. And you click Add to My Signs. And it's a really simple way for users to generate on-the-ground street signage. People think of directional signage as something that's seems fairly simple and trivial, but when it comes down to it, it's a very necessary feature of the built environment. And cities spend millions of dollars on these campaigns and take years to plan them. And I think why our project has resonated so much is that cities, communities, and organizations can hop online and create a campaign of 50 signs to promote walkability and to increase awareness about how far it is to walk places for a couple hundred or a couple thousand dollars versus a couple million.
Is it genuinely being used by city authorities or is it activists and enthusiastic pedestrians who are using it?
So I guess a little bit of history is that the initial business that is currently operating, it started with a project about 18 months ago called Walk Raleigh. And it was initially 27 signs at 3 different intersections in downtown. They targeted different demographics. It ended up getting a ton of press. The Atlantic here stateside and then also BBC News ended up covering it in a video that ended up being one of the most watched videos that week on BBC News. From that exposure, organizations, citizens, communities reached out from all over the world wanting to kind of adapt it and replicate it to their own community. I launched a Kickstarter project to see if I could rally a little bit of support to create an online template that would allow people to replicate it a little bit easier. That continued the kind of promotion train, and it ended up being organically replicated at that stage in very small ways in dozens of communities across the globe. I think, you know, over the 6 months from June when we launched a Kickstarter until the end of 2012, 75 plus different communities kind of recreated their own campaigns. They're typically small. They're typically 6 to 20 signs because it does take a while to kind of create each sign if you don't have something like the technology that we built. That was typically, it was pretty much all kind of activists, nonprofits, engaged citizens, and folks who kind of care about the health and well-being of their streets and community. Since we started to develop this technology to streamline the sign building process and make it a little bit more accessible and convenient, we actually had a much larger pool of interested parties. And so we've either worked with or customers that have just simply gone onto our platform and created campaigns range everywhere from kind of community development organizations that are focused on downtown revitalization, downtown creativity, economic development. But we also have had towns and cities that are smaller, that are maybe 1,000 or 1,500 people. We've had mountain towns, we've had coastal towns that have used it to kind of shift the focus on how they would like to see more people utilizing their small central Main Street cores. So a lot of these cities and towns don't have the finances to invest in a traditional wayfinding or directional signage campaign. London was kind of the first city to commit to more pedestrian wayfinding. The Legible London Project was kind of a pioneer, and that's what Walk NYC was created after, which just debuted a couple months ago in New York City. It's this idea that of providing a similar level of directions that are provided to motorists, but for providing them to pedestrians. That information has to be shared in a new way, and in a different way. You know, those projects cost tens of millions of dollars and take years to plan, and they're absolutely beautiful and absolutely necessary. But with this new interest in helping people get around versus cars, you know, a lot of these cities that want to embrace that culture and want to be identified with walkability don't have the funds to do so. And so we're seeing that, you know, our platform that people can really create a campaign for a couple $100, can hop online and do everything from plan to install using our process. And it's not an end-all solution, because they are fairly temporary signs. The signs last, you know, anywhere from 12 to 24 months. Some here in Raleigh have been up for 18 months and still look brand new. But depending on the context and depending on how many bars are close by, they may or may not be in better or worse shape.
Are you a pedestrian activist yourself, or was this something, I mean, where did the idea come from?
My studies are in city and regional planning and urban design. And so really everything that I've studied in school has ranged from the design of the built environment to the policies that help shape it. The design and policies that help shape healthy places for people to thrive. My interest pursuing this as a graduate stemmed from time that I spent in Copenhagen, Denmark. I was able to live there and study architecture for about 6 months, and it didn't take long for me living in Copenhagen to realize that it wasn't necessarily the buildings that I was interested in. It was more so the space between the buildings that I was really interested in. And so that's what really shifted me in the kind of urban planning, urban design, landscape architecture world, is better understanding how to both physically and through policy shape the built environment. Because those were my intentions for grad school, I chose to live more centrally in downtown Raleigh. I am a biker. I bike and walk places, and it's the kind of century of the city. More people live in cities now than ever before, and even in places like Raleigh that have predominantly been developed around the automobile, there is an incredible shift towards downtowns and towards neighborhood centers. Yet we don't really have a culture of walking here. And so the initial project, Walk Raleigh, which was simply 27 signs, was to really just shift the conversation and shift perceptions, really, about how far it was to walk places. We did a few on-the-ground interviews while I was in school, and just ask people when they were either coming to or from their car from parking downtown or parking somewhere in a neighborhood center, why don't you walk here? And a lot of people just simply thought that it was too far to walk. They were getting in their car and driving 3 blocks from store to store. We hopped on Google and basically realized that it really wasn't that far to walk. Why is it okay to walk 20 minutes in Washington, D.C., but in Raleigh it seems like anything over 3 minutes is too far? And we started to realize that some of it is the perception that's created around there being kind of gaps in the city, that there's big parking lots or that there isn't anything of interest or anything useful in between certain destinations. We decided to say, hey, it's, you know, it really isn't that far to walk in Raleigh. Let's just share how far it is to walk. We're not going to tell anyone to walk. We're just going to share how far it is, because from a lot of these more central areas, you can access a lot of great places on foot that people were traditionally driving between.
This really just started out as a sort of like an academic project to establish something around discovering why people weren't walking so much in Raleigh, but they were elsewhere in other cities in the state. So it must have taken you back when you suddenly found you were going to be thrust into the sort of global social media and then broadcast video. You know, that must have been an incredible surprise to you as well as to others around you.
It was very incredible. And I think that, you know, it's timing's everything. You know, walkability, as basic as it seems, has really been built and designed out of our daily lives, especially in the States. It's interesting to see how such a simple project could kind of strike a nerve at the right time to catch the attention of so many people who are striving to either live in more walkable environments or help shape more walkable environments, whether they're leadership in neighborhoods, communities, or cities, or whether it's citizens who don't necessarily have that choice but want it. It's exciting how easily and quickly an idea, a project, a solution can travel.
What's in it for you now? I mean, are you enthralled and excited and involved in developing it further, or is it something that you've kind of think, well, I started that one off and now I'm looking to do something different?
You know, I never intended for it to move beyond a project. What was kind of the tipping point for me, or gave me enough confidence to actually explore how deep the rabbit hole could go, was when the city of Raleigh wrote it into their comprehensive pedestrian plan, which basically established it as a recognized program and policy that they saw value in. And that actually built interest from other communities that could better understand how it could fit into their little bit more cumbersome set of criteria for projects like this.
So your city authority kind of legitimized it.
Yeah, and so through all of this, I have been observing from afar how technology is starting to play a significant role in the planning, designing, and developing of our built environment. And I kind of challenged myself to see if I could kind of marry this newer idea of civic tech with this more on-the-ground kind of urban tactic. And that's what kind of led to the creation of this platform, so that anyone who's interested could access it and make their own campaign. And so over the last six or seven months, we've been building this online tool. It's been interesting and exciting, and I've never managed building a tech product. I never imagined that I would ever be trying to manage, build, and fund a website and potentially a mobile app while in grad school last year. That's really why I've continued to go, because I'm learning so much. I'm able to participate in some really interesting conversations at the national or national level and talk to really interesting folks like yourself. You know, we're all approaching this idea of creating more hospitable places for people to live and thrive. It's that big question that everyone's seeking solutions for, especially now that budgets are so constrained, that people are living closer together, and that safety is an ever-looming issue.
You often use the word we, so it's not just you alone. You've got fellow friends working with you, or is it something that you've really been forging on your own?
I'm the only full-time employee. There is an awesome kind of support group of part-time team members who work on everything from strategy to outreach. My main kind of partner is a developer, a really young developer who's traveling the globe right now, but is, you know, puts in 10 to 20 hours a week. So I kind of manage his workflow. It's fun, but we are kind of getting to the point where we're looking for the next step. And so we are actively pursuing different opportunities with certain kind of business accelerators. We have a lot of interest from some healthcare brands, some larger lifestyle brands, and even from cities in partnering to really evolve the platform. They're really interested in sponsorship, where this idea of sign making and wayfaring could really translate well to some of the cultural changes that they find a lot of value in. And so that's what we're really exploring now, is how this could almost be an empowerment platform for a lot of these communities to really touch more people and help us deliver the change that we believe the platform can have.
5 years hence, will we find Matt still very much involved in this project?
All of the different projects and businesses that I've worked on, I see it as almost this laboratory. I think that Walk Your City will evolve. There's already a number of different other opportunities we've seen that this could bridge into. As it is now, I think it's going to be very different, and I definitely will be a part of it. I can only imagine and hope that it will be something that's much bigger, that deals with many more aspects of, you know, people having kind of independence and mobility in the built environment.
Terrific. Okay, now can you tell me also a little bit about City Fabric?
So City Fabric was basically an experimental platform to communicate with people about where they live. Walk Raleigh came out of it, and a lot of other projects that I've worked on have come out of it. I did launch a line of design goods through it that use data-driven maps as artwork and as apparel, and launched a Kickstarter project and ended up far exceeding my goal, and it kind of headed me down a rabbit hole again. That's really enabled me to float and to fund other explorations and other experiments. Again, it helped me learn a lot, but it's not my end goal to have design products. And so I'm really looking at City Fabric as just more of an exploration lab in shaping places for people. That's kind of where Walk Your City is based as well, even though it is an independent entity. It's really more so just my kind of creative platform to explore and to collaborate with other people.
I think that when people listen to you talking, they'll really admire what you've achieved. It's a really simple idea, but you were the guy who had the courage to put it together and make it happen. I think there'll be a lot of people who listen in and think, wow, that's a cracking good idea, and damn, why didn't we think of that?
It's funny you say that, because I'm a huge fan of, I call them duh ideas. It's like you kind of hit yourself on the forehead and go, duh. And I feel like a lot of projects that I've worked on, it's simplicity through design, and that they are very simple approaches to larger problems, and that it is looking at it at a more systemic level, and that all of these little simple features or project or approaches like add up to a much greater whole. And so thank you for, I guess, observing that.
So are you being courted at the moment by some of the big tech companies or organizations?
I am being solicited to provide feedback or collaborate with other companies that I wouldn't otherwise think that I would have any value in, either joining the team or supporting the team, which is exciting, you know, and again, a new challenge. I'd say everyone from kind of some more mobility-oriented or built environment-oriented startups to nonprofit organizations to healthcare companies to lifestyle brands that want to really capture either that kind of social entrepreneurial arm or really connect with a more urban generation. So it's definitely something that I'm being forced to make decisions on right now. But it's exciting, and it's nice to have options. It's definitely a little daunting after working on my own projects for 2 to 3 years to even consider teaming up with other folks. But I think that it's a way to continue the growing the knowledge base and having a positive impact.
If everybody in Raleigh leapt on the bandwagon and used your signs to promote their bar or their club, you'd probably end up with confusion and lots of signs pointing in lots of different ways, and what we in the UK call clutter on in terms of the amounts of signage. So, you know, selling an exclusive license for one group to each city, or is it a free-for-all at the moment?
Right now it's a free-for-all. I would say that if we had that issue, then that would be a good problem to have. And I think as we found over the past 18 months, that it's when certain things like that happen that we're able to reevaluate and create new policies or new standards. We certainly are thinking at that level and trying to understand, because there are spatial constraints, physical constraints to scale of campaigns like this, that we are looking for certain designations. Areas are friendly to the signs, and what those standards are and what the limitations are. And the city of Raleigh has actually agreed to, depending on how some of our funding and relationships go, to be a more engaged participant in those conversations, to see if we can't help shape almost a toolkit for these types of practices, hopefully beyond things like signs, and actually start to look at these more temporary solutions and approaches as being the go-to solution to learn and study how we can more effectively and efficiently kind of instill change on the ground that would otherwise take years and millions of dollars.
The thing that I imagine it could easily be, I wouldn't like to use the word hijacked, but I could easily see people having, temporary music festivals in a
yes,
park, or come to my birthday party or something like that, and then you have a sort of plethora of signs being thrown up.
Yeah, absolutely. We see, temporary events and other community-based events as a great opportunity to utilize the platform. Typically, when there are events like that, it means that there's a lot more people also, you know, visiting the city and driving into more central areas. And a lot of times their biggest complaints are that they don't really know how to get around or know how to move through those areas.
But is there anyone out there evaluating what you're doing and looking at how or whether your signs actually encourage people to walk more or more people to walk at all?
There are a lot of folks who are interested in how this is potentially impacting the kind of cultural perception within certain areas or communities that embrace it. The communities that have utilized it through more qualitative measures have reported significant increases in folks walking on a daily basis, talking about walking, choosing to walk, and just by kind of visually surveying their main streets on a daily basis or weekly basis post installation, they've seen very positive impacts. But it won't be for a while that we're able to really start to dive into some of the more quantitative analytics that, you know, researchers and health professionals might be interested in. It seems like tactical urbanism is really starting to rise to the top, and Mike Lydon, who's kind of championing that conversation, has become a good friend. I know Jake Levitas, who was head of the Urban Prototyping Festival in San Francisco, very well. He actually is from Raleigh. I don't know I've met the Better Block guys before, but we're all absolutely moving in the same direction. And it's again this much larger conversation about how these shorter term actions can lead to longer term change. And, you know, very inexpensive, affordable approaches can not only build awareness and camaraderie around larger investments, but can potentially move the conversation and move that action ahead much faster. You know, simple things like wayfinding, like directional signage. In Raleigh, we, about 6 months before we installed our initial Walk Raleigh project, they installed a set of 140 permanent directional signs for cars to get around town. And it took over 3 years to plan and cost $1.3 million. And so it's kind of crazy that there's nothing in between, that there's nothing to, say, deploy in a couple of weeks for a couple thousand bucks that says, hey, we're working on this. You know, this is the activity that we want to support. This is the mobility that we want to embrace. And so, you know, it's exciting to explore that. And maybe we're on too quick and too short and too affordable, but, you know, this is part of the learning process. And that's what a lot of these approaches like Better Block and urban prototyping are addressing, is this idea that cities can be a little bit more nimble, that they can be a little bit more experimental and risk failure. It's trying to change the more traditional approach to planning where you can't fail, and municipal governments where you can't fail. And you know, I think that that's what Code for America is doing, and a lot of these other more civic tech Gov 2.0 conversations are heading. It's creating a community and a support network around exploration with failure being okay. And that's what I think is so exciting.
Okay, Matt, so you've told us all about the project. You've told us about how popular it appears to be. What if I met someone at the next conference or party that I go to and I tell them about Walk Your City? What do they do to find out about it?
They can hop right online and go to walkyourcity.org, and they can play around and see how easy it is to make a sign. For folks who are outside the U.S., we actually offer digital downloads of signs so that they can actually make them locally. We're happy to ship them, but, you know, I'm sure, as you know, shipping larger parcels internationally can get fairly expensive. So we are offering that ability to download the signs, and then you can track how people interact with them on our website. And I think I forgot to mention earlier that's one of the really cool features that I'm fairly proud of that we've built into these signs, is that they are interactive. Even though they are a physical sign, there is a custom generated QR code, which is basically a glorified barcode that you can scan with your mobile phone, and it gives you custom directions that the individual who created the sign curated. And what's exciting is that creators of the signs who install them can go onto our platform and track how many times those signs have been scanned. So that's one of the main metrics that we are using to better understand kind of the impact of these signs. And we are ultimately tying it to you know, simple other metrics of healthy communities, such as carbon emissions thwarted or calories burned.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities in London. In this episode, you've heard from Matt Tomasulu. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we'd love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.